Sarkin from Fairbanks. Senator Fisher, Senator Bill Fisher on hand. A couple of pieces of committee business if we could before we begin agriculture. Senator Lassen is on hand. You should have on the top of your packet a proposed bill by the Resources Committee, and I just wanted to bring it to your attention. There's a companion bill to this in the House, signed the House Resources, going to be up to 20th, HB 273. What we're dealing with is a question of extralateral rights of federal lode mining claims. There's an issue here on the work that's going on in Juneau dealing with extralateral rights on submerged lands, and there's a tradition in the history of mining on this, but they need clarification of if a vein goes underneath the channel as to what happens, and I just wanted to notify you that I will be introducing that bill on Monday. I wrote to the commissioner recently about the possibility of export of oil on the Cook Inlet royalty oil, and have a very positive response from her. They've already been doing work on it, and I would like to make a copy of that correspondence available to the committee. Very important thing today. Important people have birthdays today, and on behalf of the committee, would like to wish a happy birthday to Commissioner Wunicki, and also to my very fine son, Roaster Zaluski, who has not received a card or any notice of this momentous thing. If it makes television, he's had his happy birthday. And,
boy, what a way to go. Say 22 cents.
And we're going to be...
You might remember for teleconference, mine's on September 6th. We're always out, you know.
I'm out, too. I'm September 27th.
Quit having
a... I celebrate the anniversary.
We're going to continue, or we did continue the public hearing on two agricultural bills, and Dr. Thomas accommodated us, is on hand today, stayed over and made arrangements on his reindeer herding. We have Dr. Jim Drew, as requested by the committee, standing by in Fairbanks, so hopefully so that Dr. Drew can hear, we'll have our buttons forward and speak so that it can be picked up in the microphone. I'm sure he'll be interested in the discussion. And I think with that, unless we have anything from committee members, we'll go ahead then, and we have SB 40 and SB 120 before us in the committee substitutes, and we will begin with in the order of sign-in. We have Debbie Brown here from the Alaska Horticultural Association, if you'd like to come forward. Just one thing before we do hear from Debbie. Commissioner, there's going to be, I know, some general discussion. Is your schedule such that you can be on hand? I know there'll be some questions, but we'd like to accommodate the public, too, because I think they'll add a dimension to this. Is your schedule?
This is fine, Madam Chairman. My next appointment is
And Senator Coghill is apparently going to cancel
till 4 o'clock.
Until 4 o'clock. So
we're gonna do the resolution on the 2477, which is what you're.
Fine. Thank you, Commissioner. So we'll just go ahead then and continue the public hearing on those two bills. And would you identify yourself and then make your remarks? And you'll find some handouts dealing with this presentation that have been made available to the committee members.
Thank you, Senator. My name is Debbie Brown, and I'm a horticulture graduate student at the University of Alaska Fairbanks. For my project, I looked on the horticulture industry and tried to get an idea of just how big industry was in the state. I had an idea it was much larger than most people suspected and went about collecting numbers. Through the survey, I identified 153 commercial greenhouse and landscape, or commercial greenhouse and nurseries, 265 landscape contracting businesses, 80 florists, and over 40 variety stores selling plants. This is the retail aspect of it that you know, want to think about. Horticulture has grown 180% in the last 10 years, and again, largely unsubsidized. The amount of gross sales from greenhouse and nursery products comes out to $23.5 million. Landscape contractors purchase additional $1.5 million in plant materials. And lime and fertilizer sales, and this, again, I'm very conservative on all of these figures. It's $2.5 million in fertilizer and lime. Variety stores seem to be selling about $6.8 million worth of foliage plants and bedding plants. And topsoil producers, it's probably at least $5 million. This goes to about $39 million of just horticulture. This doesn't even take into account the sales for the service industries, that like greenhouse contractors, or the greenhouse construction people actually build greenhouses for homeowners. Another 25 landscape architect offices are supported through this, and then two wood chipping companies solely for the horticulture industry. So, and then not to mention the transportation, there's at least 41 van loads of horticultural products that come up annually to Alaska. So it's a big industry, and very few people knew just how big it was. And even though I had an idea, I was quite surprised. And of course, we'll probably never figure out the recreational, therapeutic, and aesthetic values of horticulture as they contribute to our homes, commercial buildings, and community areas. Of which, I might note, the real estate appraisers often give $3,000 to $10,000 additional value to a home merely because it's landscape. As far as employment figures, I estimate about 1% of the total population of Alaska is involved in horticulture. And I don't really know what the workforce number is, so it's much higher percent of the actual workforce is involved in the horticulture industry. So basically, from these findings of my master's project, I wanted to let these little-known facts be known. And how they come up with Senate Bill 120 is that it seems with the Ag Revolving Loan Fund, horticulture, well, last year was acknowledged as an agricultural industry, but we've now been deprioritized. And so with the little money that was granted to the Ag Revolving Loan Fund, we don't get any unless it's particularly for operating. Well, that's the least of our worries, is buying new seed. It's building greenhouses or such.
I would like to point out for the committee that we've handed out for you the Revolving Loan Fund priorities, this sheet. And about, well, the last, next to the last paragraph, it states that no priority will be given to fir farm loans, clearing loans, further greenhouse development, et cetera. And that's what Ms. Brown was referring to. Go ahead.
Yes, thank you. I forgot that. So that's, in light of just how big the industry is, it's kind of surprising that something is actually growing this fast and has this big of an impact on our economy is not being recognized as something that's worth giving loans to. Potential is definitely there, just with a growth rate of 180% indicates. So we would hopefully like more money for the loan fund. We'd also think that it's justified to have at least one horticulturist on the board of directors. And as of now, there was one horticulturist. The position has been vacated, and it doesn't seem to be any indication that a horticulturist is being sought for this position out of the five members. If the board does vote to seven members, we really
of Debbie. Are there questions of Brown on her testimony? I think those are very useful to have the impact of horticulture before us. And I'm just wondering, that's something we might wish to address to Commissioner Wanneke when she comes up, as to whether or not horticulture should be added in the agricultural reports and information that we're getting. It's very substantial. Are there questions at all? Apparently not at this time. Thank you very much. We have next to testify Joseph King, Joe King, and I have made information available to you of materials submitted by Mr. King. Could you identify yourself, and then we're looking forward to hearing from you.
Thank you very much. My name is Joe King. I'm here to speak to you today in favor of Senate Bill number 40 and 120. I would first like to inform you as to why I'm concerned about agriculture. I am the managing partner of the Tucker Dairy, a 2,219-acre cooperative dairy at Point McKenzie. I'd also like to disperse an item on Point McKenzie that would let you be familiar with our dairy. We have in 18 months built a 60,000 square foot facility that currently houses and milks 360 dairy cows. This dairy operates 24 hours a day and milks three times a day. This dairy has a capacity of 485 cows. The dairy is as modern and as sophisticated as any dairy in the entire world. We planted and harvested in 1984 1,300 acres, which includes 175 tons of wheat silage. This dairy is currently producing one-third of Mad Muscadine's total local production. And to give you an idea of our commitment and belief in the long-range success of the dairy industry, I would tell you the following. We have invested $1,600,000 in cash and borrowed $1 million from the state. I would hope that with this sort of commitment of dollars, that you can see that we are deeply committed to the dairy industry. And believe you me, the dollars are only a part of the commitment. The time and effort that go into our parcel and others are enormous. I suppose you would ask the question, why? And I'll answer that here today. It's quite simple. I believe that based upon economic data, that we can make a profit in the dairy business at Point McKenzie. And let me repeat that. I believe that based upon economic data, that we can be successful and make a profit at Point McKenzie. And the reason is really quite simple. Because of a $6 per hundredweight transportation cost and importing milk from Seattle, that is the reason. But for this industry to be successful, we must create cost-efficient dairies and have a cost-efficient creamery. I believe that the philosophy of the state and you as the administrators to legislation should be to promote policies and legislation that will help make the dairy industry viable economically. Historically, in the past, I believe that the agriculture industry has been very poorly managed and poorly administrated. However, now, today, under the leadership of Esther Wanneke, James K. Barnett, and Bill L. Hine, there is developing a plan that is comprehensive and that can make the dairy industry viable. But only by promoting good policies of economics can the industry ever be financially independent from the state government. I believe this can be done through proper legislation. I would like to speak first of all to Senate Bill 120. And although I support the bill in its general context, I would suggest two changes to it. The first one on page 3, item number 2, would be to increase the limit from $1 million to $1,500,000.
Just a moment, if we could, Joe. Okay. On page 3,
page three
line
item
15,
2.
Am I correct?
Well, I call item 2.
Okay.
So item 13.
page 2, item 2, line 15.
That the number 1 million be deleted and the number $1,500,000 be in its place. The reason being that the $1 million is not enough to construct and make operational a cost-effective dairy, and there is no other source of funds for Alaskan dairy. Currently at Point McKenzie, the four existing dairies are not able to bring their facilities up to 100% of potential production because of a lack of capital. The increase to $1,500,000 will permit borrowing these needed funds. And to put this in perspective, let me explain to you the current situation. The ARLF currently has allocated $2.5 million to build new dairies at Point McKenzie. It is my belief, based upon hard economic facts in life, that the farming and industry in the state are best served and get the greatest return on their dollars by investing these scarce capital resources in existing operations before we create new, partially productive dairies. My figures on page 3 of my letter addressed to Arliss on February 18th gives you the data that support this idea. Secondly, on that same line, that we strike the remainder of that paragraph that deals with a 3-year time period for loans, and that we substitute the following language: that the portion of the loan over $1 million will bear interest at a commercial rate. And I believe that by doing this, we will have no problems with people talking about subsidies, but at the same time, we will help accomplish the goal of making Point McKenzie viable. Next, on Senate Bill 40, I would like to go on record as supporting this bill because it encourages production and gives industry reduced debt service. I would ask you to read my letter on February 18th, and it goes into great detail in Exhibits A through H. I thank you for your time and answering questions you might have.
Thank you very much for your testimony, Senator
Pickard. Thank you, Chair. Joe, I would first like to say that I'm very impressed with the package of materials that you submitted to our list with the February 18 letter. The letter of February 18 sets forth the kind of economic information, economic facts, that I think is necessary to really provide a foundation for agriculture in Alaska and for getting public support for agriculture, because essentially what you're outlining here is that you're demonstrating in what way an agricultural enterprise can be profitable, can repay loans, and can make an economic contribution to the state across the board. I have several questions, Madam Chair, if I may. First of all, one of the things that really interested me in the attachments was your letter of September 14 to Dean Brown, Deputy Director of the Division of Agriculture.
That's related to an article that appeared in the Daily Times on September 12th.
And you asked a number of questions of the kind that I keep asking the Division of Agriculture. There's no response attached. Did you receive a response?
I did not receive any written response. The response I've received, and I didn't really expect a response, to tell you the truth. They're awfully busy, because they probably are. I think the intent of the letter is more to bring to light the fact that we should be looking at what things should be done to make this industry viable. And it was my belief in the article in the paper on September 12th basically said two things: that the administration and people in Palmer felt that the smaller family room farms were the way to go, that they produce milk at the cheapest price. And he said, secondly, they were opposed to hired labor and sophisticated equipment. Well, I, first of all, don't believe that that's the facts, and so I wrote the letter just to see what response I could get. There's a report done by Boyd Buxton in October of 84, and he is an authority who's been hired by the state, and his data, and it's called, in my analysis, Exhibit C, has some very interesting points you might want to make. There's, first of all, a letter that he addressed to me with this report, which I have here. It's 200 pages long, and it goes into detailed analysis of the farming industry in the United States. And he says to me, it's right in the second paragraph, the results do indicate lower investment on larger farms than on smaller farms. And then over on page 14 of that same exhibit, he says, the investment per cow in dairy buildings and equipment is substantially, if you use the word substantially, less on larger than on smaller dairies across the region. On page 25 of that same report, in his conclusions and long-term analysis states, the investment per cow in dairy buildings and equipment is less on larger than on smaller dairies. And so basically, I think the data that we have before us here, and even the state's own data, Exhibit B, that I have, support that the larger dairy long-term is more viable.
I would like to just comment that many of the questions raised in your letter, maybe you didn't expect a response. I would certainly like to see a response to many of those questions, such as your question 26, how much has the state invested over the last 10 years to agriculture in loans, written off value, and so on and so forth.
Yeah.
That is the kind of information that I think is very important.
I think that question 18 is really the crux of this entire industry. And that question basically asks, is it more important to promote policies of a smaller family-run farm or produce milk at the lowest price per hundredweight? And that's the bottom line here. We have to analyze, as far as I'm concerned, and we're in this business, and what is it going to take to make this industry viable? And I think that through James K. Barnett and Esther Wanicki, that they are changing the policies of the past. And so I see a new direction here that they're supporting, for example, Senate Bill 155, and they're supporting the concepts of that bill, which provide for a splitting and combining of agricultural parcels. So I think the change is before us, and you, as a resources part of this whole world, the state, can go ahead and, I think, affect the changes we need. But I think that, you know, here's where the policies have to be started from, and all they can do is implement those policies that I perceive as legislation, I think, is necessary. And we have asked that 155 also be, you know, resubmitted, because that's a necessary part of this particular industry.
Just a comment on SB 155. That will be scheduled, but we've had information that it's not necessarily, that it can be done by the department without it, but there's no problem at all in bringing that legislation before us. So just to be sure that's not being perceived as something that will not be acted upon. Senator Fisher.
Madam Chair, I support this business economic oriented approach as against a sentimental approach to agricultural development in Alaska, and I think that's the only way we're getting a place here. I'd like to ask you another question with respect to administration of the loan program. Senator Jarup last hearing raised the question of possibly managing the program through the banks. So rather, he made a parallel reference to the parallel program of fisheries pack loans that are managed through the banks. Is there anything to be said for possible commercial bank management of ag loans?
Well, it depends upon your philosophy. The brochure that's published by the state, the very first requirement they have is that you can't borrow money someplace else. So I guess it's a matter of perception. I think that long term, and I went through the, I haven't received my copy of the fiscal year 84 budget and income and balance sheet, but I looked at the one for 83, and that showed that the cost of administrating that program was $450,000. Now, I think the state should look at perhaps consolidating it with the other agricultural fishing program they already have online. And as far as the banks go, I think that the industry is so tenuous in the sense that it's not stable economically that the banks would have a hard time making loans. Now, we can ourselves get loans, but based upon just an agricultural product and industry, I don't think at this point that the banks would make even 2 cents worth of loans based upon collateral.
Madam Chair, I wasn't suggesting that the that we use private money necessarily, but the banks handle the state's money, in effect, like HFC.
Well, I think the better way to accomplish that is use your fishing bank, whatever it's called, that exists right now. CFAB, I think they call it, something like that.
I think we should point out for the record that CFAB is a private bank. CFAB is not a public agency. Senator Fisher? Senator Halpert?
If we're going to point that out from the record, we should also point out from the record that wholly funded by the state government. And I have a problem with that set of terms.
Senator Perdua? Had you finished, Senator Perdua? I didn't want to interrupt you.
I'd like to carry on that debate in time with Senator Fisher from my personal experiences and observations of the Alaskan scene. Even in the Corn Belt, private institutions screening loans have a problem, and there's a long history of that being the paramount, primary, and best source of repayment for loans, agriculture, successful farms in that area, and they're used to making loans. You know, you can't find a person that knows anything about agricultural loans right now to serve on the State Farm Board, even. There's just the banks in Alaska have nobody. And they're being honest about it. They have nobody that's qualified to make a judgment that's willing to serve. And I suspect they have nobody, period, that's qualified to serve on the Ag Loan Board, let alone be involved in screening loans. That can be changed if we want to pay for it. But they have nobody. The banks of Alaska are used to loaning to saloons and booze houses and so on. They are not used to loaning to farms. There's no history of them doing so.
I'm allowing a great deal of latitude today,
sure,
because it was my understanding that the committee really wanted to get into agriculture and the economics of it, and that's why we have the commissioner and Dr. Thomas and Dr. Drew standing by and others. With that, I think it's important that
sure,
we have a healthy discussion here, and I appreciate your comments.
I think also related to that issue of financing, I myself think that while the Loan Board has done a good job, the problem is in the setting of policies and goals. And all they can do is disperse money. If no one in the administration has their priorities and has the policies that they're going to pursue, we can't blame them. We have to blame the people that created these policies, because the board only disperses the money. My experience has been in dealing with them. They're really quite tough to deal with, which is good from a banking standpoint. And so I think they have the interest of the state at heart. But it's a matter of getting our priorities, like in any business where we're in, like I'm in the construction business, we only can do so much work each year. We set our priorities and only do those things that make us the most money. I think the state has to do the same thing with our agricultural dollars. We can't be out doing everything that everyone dreams up. We have to analyze what makes the most sense economically and what brings back the most revenue for each dollar lent. And my letter to Bob Heath, dated June 22nd, also addresses that very point.
Thank you very much. Are there other questions, Mr. Kane? I'm sure you'll be here, Joe, if there are questions on these. Next
question. Right.
Oh, wait a minute. Senator Halpern.
With regard to your statement of increasing the loan amounts, right, a million and a half, but increasing that portion over a million becomes market rate. Mm-hmm. Couldn't you also do that by simply increasing the new loans or the statutory loan amount from 8% to 10%? If we're looking at an effective, the problem is an effective subsidy. At this point, $40,000 on $1 million, and we're trying to craft solutions within that level of subsidy without increasing the subsidy. It would seem that we could do more good for those that are already committed and started, because they have old loans at 6% and 8%, and then increase the new loans to 10%, and increase the limit at the same time.
And new loans, meaning those funds dispersed even on old loans subsequent to a certain date.
Well, no.
An old loan would be a loan that was initiated prior to this point in time, I would think.
Right. Okay. And, well, we can't change the interest rate on the existing contract. Those contracts are out.
Fine. That would suffice also. I was just trying to differentiate between loans that exist now and loans that are there now that might be increased. That's all I was trying to do. I see your point. I agree with you.
Fine. Are there other questions here? I'm sure there'll be some debate on the part of the... Thank you, Joe. Senator
Scott Hill.
I want to debate that subject
later
on.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Michael James? Mr. James?
Good to see you.
My name's
Dr. Michael James.
Yes, Dr. James. Just a moment. Senator
Rosario. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Is it going to be maybe the desire of the committee to see a response there, or a request response to Ms. Dean Brown there on the letter dated September 13th.
I think when the commissioner comes forward, that would be an excellent question.
there's some pretty good questions in there.
Right. Could you bring that up with the commissioner? She is scheduled to eventually to come before us, and yes, I think you're right, and that I gathered that intention. Senator Fisher had made a definite statement that he would like to see a response, and I think we could clarify just what the committee would request of the commissioner. Dr. James, I just saw your mother 2 days ago.
It's good
to see you here, and if you'd like to again identify yourself, and then go ahead, we'll be happy to hear from you.
My name is Dr. Michael James. I am the owner of James Farms, Point McKenzie, Alaska, which is a 1,233-acre farm, dairy farm. I was one of the lucky ones at Point McKenzie, in some people's eyes. However, there was a lot of education which has occurred in the past 2 years. In fact, in the last 4 to 6 years, Alaskan agriculture has accomplished in development when in other areas of the United States and Canada has taken up to 4 generations. And I think that's important to remember, 4 years and 4 generations. Problems encountered because of this accelerated development schedule have been beyond the control of many very reasonable, economically credible individuals. Large projects in dairy and grain production have been necessary to ensure financially viable outcomes. This has been done in spite of the limited access to financing available under the present borrowing structure in the state for agriculture. Many of us at Point McKenzie have invested a great deal of our own money in these facilities, the amounts ranging from 50 to 200% of available state loan limits. At this critical juncture in Alaskan agriculture, innovative and responsible state assistance is necessary to solidify this present base. With regard to Senate Bill number 40, production credits, it enhances responsible growth market by encouraging small and large farms to grow saleable products. There's no sense in growing 1 million tons of barley if you can't sell it. It's better to grow things which are saleable. A new product which is now being grown in northern climates is rapeseed. Rapeseed sells for $450 a ton, FOB, Dawson Creek. Now it's a hell of a lot better than $120 and Delta for barley. Senate Bill number 120. The expansion of the limits of the Ag Revolving Loan Fund are necessary as this is the only source of agricultural financing in this state. The limits previously set are not adequate to develop a financially viable dairy in the state. Need those raised to $1.5 million. Most of us new and old in Alaskan agriculture want to develop a responsible, economically viable industry in the state. Your assistance is necessary for this evolution.
Fine, thank you, Dr. James. Senator Farrenkamp?
Dr. James, I was very interested in your comments on rapeseeds, and we've been watching that product in the Delta area. But we have a major problem there with need of good herbicide, pesticide information and help in the Park State. I know one time I was instrumental in getting one person in there. But the control of the weeds in the rapeseed in that area is really a major, major problem.
Well, I think that addresses another issue here, and that's the development of adequate extension and University of Alaska research, and they're done together. Perhaps consolidating those two areas of the University of Alaska so they work well for everyone.
Dr. James brings up a point that was brought out by in your agricultural report as a possible need to see the combination of those to maximize the resources we have.
People in the university who are not in extension have to publish or perish. And if they spend their time helping us, they can't publish, and so down the truth they go. And so, It seems to me that they ought to hold dual positions. Right? I think we ought to consolidate a great deal of this research and dissemination of information.
Senator Farrenkamp.
I think I'll remember that publisher, Paris, when we have the Board of Regents before us.
That's right.
Senator Curtula.
I'd like to ask a couple of questions.
Certainly.
Thank you. First, a comment. DEC is going to cut out the only pesticide specialists in the state under a reducing budget, so I hope that you will also assist in keeping that one person. One in all of Alaska is ridiculous, but they even cut that out. I'm not careful. It's unacceptable for a whole lot of reasons. But what, and I'm sure you didn't expect to, but how much of your own capital, resources, and guarantees do you have in the dairy farm that you put together in the last 3 or 4 years, Dr.?
it's in excess of $500,000. I don't want to know. My personal finances, if they turn those things off, I'll be happy to talk to you. But it's in excess of that, and I'm serious about this business. This is not some pastoral scene out of the middle of the state of Washington with cows munching on grass there beside some lake. This is a business, and we, as Joe said earlier, we want this to be a viable industry because we've got our money on the line here, too, and we're going to make it work. And, but we need some help from you folks and a little bit of breathing room. And breathing room is really necessary to get it off the ground. You know, we've got the baby almost born, but it isn't quite there yet.
All right.
I may continue once more.
Once more than Senator Lattice and Senator Fisher and Senator Cowell.
I just want to make a statement, too, that he has a very qualified family, wife that's very, very efficient and competent business person, and she, too, is putting a tremendous amount of effort into this unit. It shows, but as a matter of fact, again, this just the state is putting up, these people are really putting up large blocks of money to do one thing, save this industry for the state.
Now, Senator Lassen.
Madam Chair, how many people do you employ?
At the present time, we have 4 people permanently. In the summertime, we'll have about 8 or 9. Our dairy was designed to operate extremely efficiently with a low labor overhead. And that's the reason we can operate on 4 presently. I think when we're in full production, it'll probably be 6 full-time employees.
How many farms are there in that area? Looking at the overall employment picture for the industry, if in fact it's going to be lead substantially to an increase in employment in Alaska.
Presently, there are 19 dairy tracks at McKinsey. Joe, I believe, is involved there. Farm collectively has 3 or 4 of them, and I track 28 and 29. I suspect that we're talking about functional, viable, healthy dairies that are going to help, and I suspect that if you will allow the consolidation of these dairies, as is noted in that Bill 155, submitted by Dr. Snyder. That it will allow us probably 7 or 8 very highly productive dairies, which after they're stabilized can consider expanding. And so you're probably going to end up with 9 healthy dairies out there, I would suspect, right around that range. And I mean, what I mean by healthy, I mean ones that are going to make it. You're not going to be back there crying at your doorstep every year. For every dollar that we spend in agriculture, I think this is important to realize too, that dollar turns probably 2 additional times in this state. It's not, we're not spending at our local supermarket in the state. We buy fertilizer, we buy feed, we buy fuel, and most of us at Point McKinsey is supported in the Natsu Valley, and where we buy our products, whether it's Cottle's Fuel or one of the fuel agencies there in Los Angeles, or it's one of the local lumber yards.
And you said 4 or 5 people for each dairy? Is that
what? Well, I suspect it'll be more than that. There's going to be, in order to develop that whole infrastructure, there will be anywhere between 6 and 15 people in each of these dairies. You also have fuel people. They're going to be providing fuel because it consumes a great deal of fuel. You're going to have feed sources coming in there, whether it's Matt Nate or somebody else. You're going to have veterinarians. You're going to have vet supply people, dairy supply people, the infrastructure probably, or the support system probably is at least 2 to 1 if you consider everybody included.
The figure's around 15 per dairy farm. I guess that's the figure I'm looking for.
Well, it depends upon the size of the dairy now and how efficiently you can design that dairy.
Well, we don't know then.
Well, I can tell you pretty close, but we're going to run about 6 full-time employees and probably 1 or 2 relief workers when we're in full production.
Yeah, these 15 farms, dairy farms?
Well,
around about 90 or 100 people workforce. Yeah, we're talking about that many jobs.
And then you're talking probably another 300 jobs created by the various needs of these dairies. Just, and now it's just been...
I understand our support place for every business. Yeah. I'm just curious about how many people will actually be employed.
On the dairy, I suspect you're going to have in excess of 120 people.
120 people.
At McKinsey.
Thank you, Senator Fisher.
Thank you, Chair.
you foresee a time when the operation will be commercially solid enough, you will be on your feet, as you indicate, where the ag-revolving fund will not be necessary, or is that something that will be needed each year to sort of keep the cycle running?
I believe that with the with the fiscally responsible individuals involved in most of these dairies, that within 3 to 5 years, this thing should level out. At that point, any ag-revolving loan fund needs would be needed for example, planting and things like that, with short-term money, which is, what's the term they use for that, Jay?
Cattle short.
Then we have some option in choosing, and perhaps a loan fund won't even be involved at that point in time. I suspect they won't.
My second question, Madam Chair. You seem to have a solid financial plan for your operation. You know what you're doing. You've had this figured out. So I wonder the extent to which Senate Bill 40 is pertinent to your type of operation, whether it'll be something that is necessary for your survival or whether it will provide in effect, a windfall that you'll happily take, but that isn't necessary for your commercial operation.
When I first started into this enterprise, or whatever you want to call it, all my economic analysis were based upon $22.50 milk. Matt Maid was a nice, viable entity, and we were all going to walk down the path to financial success. Unfortunately, the milk price has dropped 15%. Matt Maid had significant difficulties, which are only resolved by the wisdom of the state, unfortunately. But we've come in kind of left in a holding in the bag here, I must say. I don't believe it's a windfall. It may help us to maintain ourselves and put this on a cash flow basis a more reasonable period of time so that we can get a net return. I don't think anybody in this room, if they knew what we had done, would ever start out and do the same thing we did as far as the use of our money. You'd think we were nuts. But we believe it'll work. But we do that well. But it was under the slightly different circumstances when we started out. All of a sudden, we had some big surprises that came up before us during the summer of 1984.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, Senator Galbraith.
Thank you, Madam Chair. There's now 4 or 5 operating farms on Flint McKinsey.
That's correct.
And there's a number of other farms where there's partial clearing, some with almost nothing done, some of them are hay farms, some of them are on a dairy schedule. How can we help those who have really put their own money into it and are, in fact, going forward as fast as they can, as you are, and the Tucker operation, Lee's operation, the operations that are really working? How can we help those and, in fact, weed out the people that are there just for land speculation, that are now waiting for increased loan amounts, set-offs on development schedules, and these other things that we're going to pick up a lot of the rest of the area on which, in some cases, almost nothing has been done. They're supposed to have cows by November of this year.
September 11th.
Okay, September 11th of this year.
I know.
And some of them haven't done much of anything.
That's correct.
And there really needs to be some method of natural selection by which we can help the real farmers, be they Point McKinsey or Delta, and stop subsidizing those who aren't going to make it. How do we do it?
Well, this is a democracy, and that's kind of difficult. But you can help us by expanding our loan limits, by allowing us to consolidate these geographically contiguous tracts. I have track 28 and 29. On 28, we've built 40,000 square feet on a roof, and we've poured over 1,000 yards of gravel. This has been a big operation for 2 years. If they don't allow us to consolidate, I'll help build this rinky-dink little bar down on 29 and spend that money, which would be better used in ensure our own financial viability. These two tracks sit one next to each other, and they run for two straight miles, and we can farm two straight miles with this. But we need to have the consolidation. Secondly, we need access to capital. There's CFAB has less than 0.5% of their entire loan package is out to agriculture. They're not interested in loaning agriculture. Some of the other agencies up there are not interested in loaning to us new farmers. You're our real only source of agricultural financing. So we need the limits expanded some. But it's not giving your money away. It has to be done in a financially credible way. And the loan board is interested in providing that. They don't want to be taking back little bitty berries or even big berries.
Senator Halpern, then Senator Halpern.
Just to follow up on it, though, it seems that when we increase the loan limits, we're increasing the loan limits for everyone that a board decides to give the money to that makes the qualification of the legislation. And I don't have much of a problem saying to you, when you've got in excess of $500,000 of your own money at stake, that I don't think there's a risk in increasing your loan limit. I think there's a substantial risk in increasing the support for those that have done almost nothing over there. And how do we differentiate? How can we help the four or five farms that are there without, in a democratic process, spending money on about a 3-1 ratio of success?
Well, I think people in the loan fund, as you say, there are limits. You don't have to lend people what your limits are, do you?
But they do.
Well, they don't have to, and they somebody has to go in with a good financial plan if they're going to go to a bank and borrow money. You just can't go in and borrow money willy-nilly from most financial sources. And it's the same thing with a loan fund. If you're going to build a dairy, you've got to have good plans. You've got to have management. And you have to have those things in place. And if those people don't want to do all the necessary things which are deemed necessary by the responsible lender, then they ought not to lend them the money. There are no obligations to lend the money. That's just that. We advertised in the National Dairy Magazine for 3 months, 150 applications for the job as farm manager at our farm. Joe scoured the United States to find their fine farm manager also. We've done a lot of research before we put any brick and mortar in the ground.
Well, the problem I have is that history tells us we've got a default rate that no bank could ever survive in the real world with. We've got a delinquency rate that's very high, and if we had to sell our whole portfolio, we probably wouldn't get more than 50 cents on the dollar. So it's not your situation that put us there.
No.
It's not the four or five farms of Fund McKinsey that look really good and are doing a great job.
This keeps coming up because I keep suffering from the sins of past folks. And they always start crimping us, and they put all these restrictions on it. And that's fine. I don't mind. It's just a little, we have the same rules. But then all of a sudden people roll back and say, well, we got the delinquency rate and this and that. Well, there isn't. We've got too much at stake here. We're not going to walk from this thing.
Senator Farrenkamp.
Madam Chairman, this bothers me because it's already been stated here today that we've gone four generations worth in 4 years. You can't do that without having any crash effort has mistakes in it. I have more confidence in the board than this seems to express. I think we learn from our errors. Anytime we try a new program, we don't even put in new laws that don't have bridges. So none of us are so darn perfect. And in one response to Senator Halpern's, how do we help those who are really trying? I don't see anything that could have helped more than 50. Senate Bill 50 says if you're producing, 40, then you 40. Get some, I mean 40. If you're producing, you get some credit for that, and we'll recognize that. And there's one answer. It's one step in the right direction. And we've taken other steps in the direction through insurance programs and other things. But we can't keep going back. We've got to look at where we are now and what we can do to do the best job from now on. If we did that, Christ, we would have closed down fisheries. And when they had a problem supposedly with botulism, whether that was an international thing or botulism or what it was, we came through. And there are just times Well, we've got to have a little faith, hope, and charity. Thanks, Denver. Senator Petrula?
Rick. Of course, there are about 10 loans that have just come out of audit and fresh today. You can make comparisons to the Ag Loan Fund and then make comparisons to the development part that I asked, and I hope Phil can bring us versus the old farm group and those that are already in production. The thing that I want to mention, though, is the legislature didn't fail to recognize the problem for Point McKenzie. We put in a pre-qualification statute that said they would be pre-qualified like any oil company. You and I can't form an oil company and put $50 in and go bid on the North Slope. You have pre-qualifications. We wrote that as a condition of the Point McKenzie project so that we would get pre-qualification. It was the court practically destroyed Matt Niskanen and practically destroyed this project that held us up for 2 full years in court on the pre-qualification. Then when we rewrote the law, meet any court responsibilities, I'll admit this, DNR did not enforce that law. But the pre-qualification, because a dairyman really, without money, a lot of money, is a tremendously difficult person to get for a project like this. It's a very sophisticated person indeed. But we did write the pre-qualification statute. We recognize that the court is the one that, right or wrong, they set it aside. Now there's pre-qualification back in line again, and it ought to be enforced for the next project, even when there is one. And I think
I would like to say we have other people specifically asked for information to come back to us. We have not had an opportunity to hear from Sig Restad. Are these questions that are pertinent to Dr. James, or can they be held until the other people are there? But for Dr. James, I certainly want them asked. Fine, thank you very much. We appreciate your testimony, and I hope you'll be staying too. We have a number of other people, but you're the only one on the list that has not had an opportunity. So why don't you come forward at this time, and be happy to hear your testimony.
Well, thank you, Senator. I'm Sig Restad, presently for a few months the acting director of the Agriculture and Forestry Experiment Station with the University. I've had several positions in the past, as most of the committee know, going back quite a ways. And one of the things I am involved with is the Alaska Rural Development Council, and we had a meeting here in Juneau about a month ago, and had at our luncheon with Senators Coghill and Petrula to talk about some agriculture legislation. We agreed after that luncheon to have a board of directors take and review some of the legislation that was presented at that time, and it covered many more than the ones you're considering today. And so I have some notes from the board meeting that I would just like to leave with the committee as for whatever purpose they might use them. I might say that the Rural Development Council is a group of primarily agency people, but open to the private sector and borough, and we've had active participants in many areas. We have an interest in the development of rural Alaska, and have been active in many activities since about 1967. Before making any specific comment on the legislation, I'd just like to make an agricultural comment or two. I think that it is easy for us to forget in a country that spends only 12.9% of its take-home pay for groceries that agriculture is very important. If we spent 50% like Northern Europe, it might be a little bit easier to recognize the importance of food on the table. And I think that's something we need to bear in mind. I think the state and the legislature is to be commended in some very significant efforts to try and get agriculture moving and developed. They have, you might say, gone in joint venture with several private entrepreneurs in getting farms started at Delta and Point McKenzie projects around the state. And I might, just for an analogy, for the sake of discussion, kind of compare it to buying a product from Chrysler. It has a 50,000-mile warranty, And occasionally there's something that isn't just quite right when you buy it new, and you have to bring it back to get some of the bugs fixed. And I think the state and the legislature went into some projects in good faith. Maybe these things weren't 100% correct. National and international and state factors have changed significantly since these projects began. And we need to, upon occasion, take a look and see how we can best clear up some of the bugs and take them out and get the thing back on the road again. I don't think because we have some problems that the whole car isn't worth salvation. And that's kind of the way I would like to put it here today. I think that, as I mentioned before, there's a strong commitment on the sincere farmers that are taking parcels. And times have changed. And I think that we have a responsibility to help out those that really have put forth significant input. If agriculture is of value to the state, then very likely agriculture or the state has a commitment to agriculture. And so we need, as a state, to look at these things. If you've been following the press lately, I think you all know that it's not only here where the agricultural industry has a significant amount of problems. I took one of the newspaper articles that talked about the bad loans projected in the Midwest, and I put a division factor into the numbers of loans and the millions of dollars, and calculated in excess of $500,000 per lender. And that's in the Midwest where agriculture has been a going thing and been developed for 100 years. And they presumably don't have the development bugs to contend with. And so I think this is a consideration we want to consider. One of the areas that kind of addressed the effort of individual farmers to help themselves and to offer some help to those who are working hard is, as mentioned by Senator Ferencamp a minute ago, is SB 40. It is a reward, if you will, for production effort and production success with very little additional cost on the part of the state. I only have one concern, and that in a way it is a measure that tends to concentrate the fiscal responsibility with the state, when at some time we should find a way to be able to spread the financial structure so that other agencies could be enhanced to take part in the agricultural industry. And the Ag Revolving Loan Fund is the only game in town today for all practical purposes. And hopefully down the road we can find ways to change that. I would certainly support the efforts of SB 40. I'm just going to make a couple of statements. I think there are people here who are more farm-oriented. I'd be happy as a resource person to answer any questions. I volunteer at any time to either by telephone call or whatever way to help in any way I can. An example of this is the production credits in SB 40. When we got word to try and work on this, we put one of the station economists on the proposals to develop a kind of a scenario as to what may be the best approach with the legislation that was proposed. And in a couple of days, she kind of came up with a model and some figures and some suggestions. And I think the substitute for SB 40 recognizes some of those, and that illustrates, I think, our willingness to help out where we can. No. You you always hear about the problems, I'm sure. And the success stories are kind of hidden away somewhere. And Delta farmers have problems now in trying to select what is the best variety of barley to grow. When I managed the university experimental station farm in 1958, I didn't have that problem. We had one barley variety. It's not used today because it isn't any good. It just doesn't compare. Those barley varieties that are used are the result of research. And I think this is something that in the total picture we can't forget. Hopefully the problems are kind of solved for the moment. The research program in the state has had a combined effort for federal support and state support since 1948, and the federal has been withdrawing their support over the years, and we have some problems with their withdrawing support right now, and puts our research staff thinner than it was before. There was a comment made about rapeseed versus barley, and the comment is very good. Rapeseed is a significantly more valuable per acre crop. And I think, again, Senator Frankamp said it very well, and there's some things we need to know. Relatively small things. A minor thing like boron deficiency, which you can correct for practically nothing, was an unknown factor in raising rapeseed 5 years ago, and we can handle it now. It's the difference between rapeseed maturing and not maturing. And it's things like this that we need to enhance and get moving to make these things a little more economically viable. I think that there have been some real strides made in the proposed legislation this year, and I would support these two pieces of legislation I had the privilege, you might say, of being involved with agriculture in several parts of the industry, from the research end, from the production end, from the regulatory end, and promotion end, because I had about 6 years in the chair that Bill Heim has, and it was a different kind of a ball game then. But the loans were smaller, and the problems were just as numerous. But if I recall correctly, we were trying to save the dairy industry then too, gentlemen.
Fine. Thank you very much, and I do have some questions for you.
Okay, fine.
Senator Frankamp first, and then Senator Fisher.
Madam Chairman, knowing his background and some of the others that are here and those that are listening, I have a concern, I guess, more than a question, but maybe they can help us solve that concern. And that is that we have in the state, as I see it, five viable industries, if you will. One fisheries, one tourism, one agriculture, one mining, and one timber.
In addition to oil.
In addition to oil. Everybody knows oil's there, and it's got its problems too, but those industries are our capability, as far as I see it, and we're all talking about economic diversification and development of the state. And I'm wondering, as we look at the emphasis that the state puts on each of these industries, through either the agency level or commission level or whatever it happens to be, if we really recognize our priorities as they're set up and how we can more equitably get the five areas outside of crude with a little bit more attention, like to research, like to back up, like to the state support or to trying to make them work. And so I guess what I'm looking for in the next few years is some kind of an answer of how we get some development schedules or attention paid to the problems in each one of those areas. It's not just ag, it's timber and everywhere else.
Senator, just before we came to this hearing, we were for a few minutes at the Forestry Task Force meeting, which is meeting this afternoon also. That's one of the infant industries with some problems as well as agriculture. There, as you mentioned, there are others. And if I were to offer one thing that is a concern of mine, is that there are some things that these infant industries have in common, besides just not enough money. And we need to concentrate on those things that we really have in common. There's some research needs for forestry, and there's research needs for agriculture and these, and some of them enhance each other, some may not. But some of the common things, and one of them that comes to mind, and I think you, this committee probably has addressed it in other areas, is access. There's a tendency, I think, for the press, for some people, and maybe even some people in government, to suggest that the cost of developing roads to an agricultural project is an agricultural cost, or the cost of a trail to bring out lumber is a forestry cost, when in fact the farmers or the foresters or the miners, if it happens, are probably the minority user once that access is placed in existence. And I think it is a public cost that needs to be addressed in it. And we could use some really development orientation in that way. I think there's other areas where we just, because funds are tight, we need to find every way possible to coordinate our functions so that we get the biggest bang for our buck.
Fine, thank you. Senator Fisher?
Thank you, Chair. I'm not sure if you're the greatest expert on this, maybe.
I probably have an answer for it anyway.
Okay, what I'm interested in is what alternative financial institutions are there available to farmers across the country? There are various types of cooperative farm banks or the Commodity Credit Corporation, and I'm not sure what they are, but are any of those that may be available to us one of these days, if not now?
All right. I'll review some, and particulars on them Dr. Thomas might be able to hit better than I, but there are, and the two main ones you think of, or are three, and one of them being the Federal Land Bank system, which is a cooperative banking system that was established with federal funds, but is now independent. And it exists in the state and is managed by ARRC, the Alaska Rural Redevelopment Corporation. Sort of a blue chip banking institution, especially here. Production Credit Associations is an operating loan concept nationally that was developed in the same way as the Federal Land Bank and is handled in the same way. CFAB Bank is very comparable to that and works through the Federal Bank of Co-ops. And so to a degree, that banking system is in place, we can put it to use. Farmers Home Administration is the one that nationwide has been looked to for the small farmers that couldn't get financing anywhere else as a kind of a last resort finance institution on a national scale. And Farmers Home Administration exists here, but because of national guidelines, they don't fit very well into the national picture, and they practically don't fit at all in the Alaska picture. From there, you go to other more conventional type of financing institutions, insurance companies, banks, and so on, of which many banks in ag-related areas exist only because of their agricultural financing.
Thank you very much, Senator.
Just one follow-up question. CFAB supposedly was set up for fisheries and ag. Does CFAB do anything in the area of agriculture?
There's a sincere effort on the part of CFAB, and they do have some agricultural loans, and they fit right now in kind of specialized situations for a couple of reasons, and one of them, of course, is the interest rate situation, because they use money that's at the going rate and, of course, then lend it at the going rate or whatever they need to in relationship to that. One of the other things that make it difficult for developing areas like the Delta Project or Point McKenzie is that all of these agencies, for anything other than some operational monies, require first position on their on real estate. And of course, in all these situations, the state is the first position holder. The other one significant factor is that almost all of the federal agencies and private agencies, financial institutions, base their loaning procedures on some sort of track record of production. And new areas don't have a track record of production. And this again presents a problem.
Thank you.
I find. Thank you very much. I'm going to ask that we hear now from Bill Hine and Commissioner. We had some specific requests on the part of the committee regarding the loan programs. I would hope that we can today, if at all possible, get some specific direction on the part of the committee on these bills, either move them or say where we want to go. We have a very busy committee schedule, and I'd like some direction on that. But I wonder if we might ask someone, would you check and see if Senator Halford and Senator Fahrenkamp are there? I think they were interested in the loan.
They might need a two-minute recess.
Situation. Well, the only problem about two-minute recess is we tend to lose people. So,
because they're out getting coffee. Well, we could move them right now if you wanted to. Can I be a proxy?
I think there's some information that we need. We could give you a proxy for how many people, Senator?
Two or three, it doesn't matter. I'm counting around you. Maybe four.
All right. Commissioner, would you like to go ahead?
Thank you, Madam Chairman. It's been very interesting for me to hear the testimony before the committee by those who have testified, and also the questions and comments that the various members of the committee, Senator Petula, have had. If I may just kind of be a cleanup batter for a moment with response to some of those questions that were raised. With respect to horticulture, we did add horticulture, which had never been a part of the Agricultural Revolving Loan Fund. But one reason it does not get the high priority by the board, of course, is the limitation of funds for operating loans that are now before the board. And my understanding of the way the board developed their criteria for priority for loans for this upcoming year, they gave first priority to those operating loans where the product had a market. And so we did add horticulture. I do recognize it as an important part of the overall picture in Alaska, but unfortunately the board did not give it that high priority. With respect to the management of the ARLF, since we have come into office, we have sought and had two audits, one by the Office of Management and Budget, and one by the Legislative Budget and Audit Committee. And I think there has been tremendous improvement in the businesslike way that loan fund is being administered. And they, like any other lending institution, of course, seek economic activities, just as Dr. James and Mr. Gaines testified to you. We believe that administratively we can combine and split tracks, and that's the only reason for not pressing for Senate Bill 155, and we have requests to do that. I think that you cannot make an overall statement that all tracks should be large or all tracks should be small. It depends upon circumstances. It depends upon the product to be produced. It depends upon the terrain and a lot of other factors. And so we want that flexibility and believe that we can do that administratively, at least have been so told by the Attorney General's office. We have, I'm sure, explored with CFAB, and I think that Sue Bickstack stated that very accurately, that at least for this infant industry, there are not many loans given by CFAB. I thought Senator Fisher's comments with respect to economy were very good, and Senator Helfrich's also. I think we have all come to a real dose of reality, and that some of the things that were begun in the agricultural projects in Alaska were begun at the height of the land market, at the height of prices for milk and height of world market prices for barley and so forth. But I think we have to exercise those old devils, if you will, and not continue to condemn a whole industry by mistakes that were made in the past. I think we have to go from where we are with as clear a vision of reality as we can, with as much common sense approach to the problems that we can. And I believe that is what the legislation before you does. I think these are practical answers to practical problems of where people find themselves right now. We can't undo the past much as we might like to. I think that Senate Bill 40, with its emphasis on production credits, answers probably the underlying question that some of you asked with respect to how do you weed out the ones who are not going to be viable parts of the agricultural industry. And you do that by focusing not on relieving debt per se, but on the production of agricultural products. With respect to the loan fund itself, there are $48,454,644.47, as they would say, approximately, of outstanding loans that represent 266 people as borrowers and 759 separate loans. We were asked, or I think Mr. Heim was asked when he was before you earlier in the week, to distinguish the failure rate, if you will, between the old farmers and the new farmers. To get a good rule of thumb on that, he took the Matanuska Valley farmers, which are more apt to be established and be old farmers, so to speak, and Delta farmers that are more apt to be new farmers. And the contrast there is that the rate is 15.5% for the old farmers versus 47% for the new farmers. But overall, if you look at the delinquency rate of the agricultural revolving loan program in comparison to the delinquency rate of other loan programs in the state, overall it's not that dramatically different. And the figures that I have were table 2 in the report that was given to you and to the governor, and I believe that's been distributed to you. But there it shows, by comparison, that the delinquency rate for agricultural revolving loans was 15.6%, with a delinquency of $6.9 million. This would be during the period fiscal 81 to fiscal 86. The delinquency rate for commercial fishing loans during that same period would be 14.4%, with a total monetary delinquency of $11.5 million. The delinquency rate for tourism revolving loans is 16.3%, to compare percentages.
That's very small, however, is it not?
That is a very small amount
of money.
Right. Yes. And things like the scholarship loans, 6.7%. I thought the points that Sig Rigstad made were excellent ones. I've made them many times myself in public forums. I grew up in a rural agricultural community and in the Southwest, and it was never charged against the agricultural industry, at least in the minds of people who lived there, the costs of electrification or the costs of roads, or even, if you will, the cost of irrigation, because that was an area where that was very arid, where tremendous amounts of money were spent for dams and irrigation projects. And yet, all those years, I never heard anyone say, look at all the money that has been spent for agriculture. It's not an economic thing. It's been too highly subsidized. And I think one of the things that's happened in Alaska, and Senator Faircamp mentioned it with respect to oil, and I think I've been guilty of it, and I think that many people have, we have tended to look at all of our industries through the prism of that fortuitous set of circumstances that put Prudhoe Bay under state lands. And through the years, I think it's become kind of a common conversation for people to say about fisheries, or about timbering, or about agriculture, or about mining, oh, that doesn't bring any great direct revenue to the state of Alaska. That must have a low priority. And I think that we look through this prism, if you will, of Prudhoe Bay at a lot of things in Alaska that do need that initial boost, that do need that initial priming of the pump, if you'll forgive the expression, to get started. And yet, what we want to see happen is to have all of those things as rapidly as possible, totally in private hands, self-sustaining economic activities. I think that's the goal that we're striving for. And it's why I think the goals that this administration is expressing are much more common sense, much more realistic kinds of goals than were expressed a few years ago. But that was done in the light of different prices, different circumstances, just a different scene. It was not this scene. We took a hypothetical Farmer Brown through an application of the production credits portion of the bills before you, because I know that one of the concerns that's been expressed by members of the committee is, although we're not asking for any new money in this package of legislation except the $25,000 for commodity credit corporations, that there's been a concern, but what about the money that is foregone to the state because of the application of something like the production credit? And in our hypothetical, did we pass those out?
Yes.
In our hypothetical look at Farmer Brown, the provisions of the bill would make credits available at the same rate of 20% for the first 5 years, and then they would begin, the percentage would begin to decrease as time went on. So assuming that you had a 15-acre barley farm that produced a ton of barley per acre, and assuming the price to be $125 a ton, and then assuming that this same farmer had a chattel loan of $208,000 and a farm development loan of $119,000, and that he purchased land from the state at $180 an acre, and has a land clearing loan for that same land of $300,000, he would make sales of barley of $187,500 that year. 20% of that would give him a credit available of $37,500. But the interest on the loans that he would then be obligated to pay would only be $30,660. So that's all the credit that he would get, the interest on those loans. And then he would pay $25,900 of the rest of his loan payments. And so it would go down through 1994. Next 10 years. We would, under that assumption of facts, we would have foregone in that instance $278,000.